Hi everyone, this is Chandler Frazier-Pauls and welcome back to Admission Insight. We hope the school year is off to a positive start and we are wishing you all well as you navigate the year. This episode has been one we've been hoping to get recorded for a while now and we are so happy to have it all come together. We are lucky enough to have some great guests that will be joining us today for a roundtable discussion on navigating a virtual admission season. We think you will find the conversation informative, useful, and a bit fun. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. And as we like to say, let's go!
So you say you want to apply to private school. We're gonna show you what to do. Walk through the steps to take. And everything's gonna turn out great. We're gonna find the right fit. Both for you and for your kids. Based off school culture and needs. We're gonna bolster your chances.
All right, welcome to Admission Insight. As I said, we're very excited about the guests we have tonight to kind of speak on navigating a virtual admission season. I'm going to let Sharon Jarbo start and introduce herself, and then we'll kind of go around and everyone will get their shot. So go ahead, Sharon.
Thank you, Chan. Hi, everyone. I'm Sharon Jarbo, Director of Admission and Financial Aid at the Pennington School. I've been in this role for 7 years, and I really look forward to tonight's conversation.
Awesome. Billy Hawkey.
Hi, everyone. My name is Billy Hawkey, and I'm the Associate Director of Admissions at Avenues the World School, located in Manhattan, New York City.
Great. Christy Wellborn.
Hello, I am Christy Wellborn. I'm the Director of Admission and Enrollment at Chapin School in Princeton, and I'm glad to be here.
And Taylor Kenyon.
Awesome. Yeah. Hi, everyone. I'm Taylor Kenyon. I'm the Director of Secondary School Placement and Alumni Engagement at Princeton Academy of the Sacred Heart here in Princeton, New Jersey. I'm in my third year here at PASH and also do a lot of coaching and some admission work and some development work around campus. They definitely keep me busy.
That's great. So we have a star-studded kind of crew here tonight. Really excited about it. We'll start with, you know, who wants to chime in on what was your guys' school's reopening plan, you know, and if you want to speak on how the fall has kind of unfolded thus far, I'm interested to hear any of those thoughts. Yeah.
So Chapin School, we offered an on-campus 5-day experience as well as an online experience. Students online can transition back on campus every 30 days, meaning like, so the students who decided not to come back on campus beginning in September, some of them have returned back to campus in October. They had until September 25th to make that decision. And so that's the way we plan to continue for as long as we can. Hopefully there's no disruption to that plan. And of course, everything was built around safety, but we also tried to look for every opportunity to bring faculty and students back together because community is really, really, really important to us. And we felt that that daily connection was going to be really important. But it definitely was not easy. Building an on-campus experience required everything, as I'm sure you all can relate to, everything from single-person bathroom use, directional hallways, desk appropriately spaced out, lunches being delivered to the classrooms, who's delivering them, cohorting the grades, cohorting the faculty and the staff, extending the hours of the faculty and staff to minimize usage of like additional staffing coming into the building, reducing the aftercare hours so that we could just have a continuation of human resources without bringing a lot of people in the afternoon. I mean, all of that is just bananas, but we was actually able to do it and we feel really good about what we built. And in addition to building that, simultaneously, we were also building a robust online experience for those families or students that weren't ready to come back on to campus. And so now the teachers in the classroom, they're truly superheroes because they are doing double duty because they're both teaching in two modalities, really to two different audiences simultaneously. So I know we're not unique in that, but really proud at what we were able to accomplish.
Yeah, I can jump in, share a little bit about how Avenues approached our reopening. So, you know, just for listeners out there, for some context, Avenues is part of a network of schools around the world We have a campus in Sao Paulo, Brazil, and a campus in Shenzhen, China. And both of those campuses actually, you know, went into lockdown and had their school closure before we did here in New York City. And on the flip side, they also reopened before we did. And so we had an opportunity to learn from some of our other campuses and colleagues around the world in terms of their reopening strategies and some of the safety protocols that they implemented, how they were able to kind of reintroduce in-person instruction while de-densifying and, you know, obviously making some adjustments to ensure the safety and well-being of all the students and families, while also trying to preserve those elements that make an avenue's education distinctive and what our families expect to have. And so, you know, it was months and months of around-the-clock planning. And ultimately in New York, what we did is we are open. We have been, this is our fifth week of school now, and things are running smoothly. Like Christy said, you know, lots of day-to-day operational things have been accounted for, from one-way traffic in, you know, stairwells and hallways, you know, minimizing the number of students in elevators, hand washing stations, and, you know, masks. And I think a lot of the things that most schools are doing. But one of the unique features of our middle through high school program is a flexible schedule where students can come into school for 5 days a week in-person instruction. And when they're here on campus, they're assigned to a pod and they stay with their pod. Part of our design is to not allow any mixing of these pods. And so they are staying pretty much the entire day with that pod. For some families, that's a great option to come back and be in the building and have that social element. But for other families that might not be ready to send their kids back, they're able to stay home and do distance learning. And families can actually make that call on a daily basis. It's a very flexible design. And so students are either expected to be in person come 9 a.m. for their first class or on Zoom at 9 a.m. And that's where attendance is taken. And it's really left up to the family's discretion in terms of what they want to do.
Yeah. So I was prepared to say that Pennington, being a 6th through 12th day and boarding domestic and international school, had the most complex reopening plan. But, you know, we're not that special. And it's really uplifting to hear from my colleagues just how much intensive thought went into every single detail of every one of our plans. And I think that's something families need to appreciate, that whether they're returning to a school that's 100% in person, hybrid, or distance, the amount of thought is hard to fathom when you're just the customer. Billy, you said that your schools were able to learn from each other, and Pennington is the other schools here were standalone schools, but something that's been happening that's so uplifting that people need to appreciate is that the competition that can be between schools over great students or on the playing fields or whatever it is has dissolved at this point. And our headmaster was on weekly calls with other headmasters from our area and sometimes even the entire East Coast region, sharing ideas because we've been trying to figure this out. So our plan, after much, much thought and consideration, is a hybrid plan. We have some boarding students in different countries who, due to visa restrictions, travel restrictions, cannot get to campus, so they are 100% distance learning. We have some from other countries who were able to arrive along with our domestic boarders. We are set up to quarantine anyone who arrives from an uncertain or risky area right in our own dorms. And we're encouraging our regular day students to take advantage of as much in-person learning as they can. They are two cohorts and they rotate every other week. And they are also then in smaller groups so that if there were a case, we can do contact tracing right away. So it's very complex, very well thought out, but when you get to campus, I think I could speak for all of us, it just feels like a happy school, right?
Absolutely. Great. Taylor, anything you want to add on to that? Yeah, I'd love to. And I'd love to provide your listeners with a little context and just say that, you know, at Princeton Academy of the Sacred Heart, we're a small, about 180 student K through 8 all boys school. And we have the luxury of being on this beautiful 50 acre campus and a beautiful physical plant as well. And our small size and, you know, only two of our nine grades are more than 22 students right now. So it's only the seventh and the eighth grade where once we get into two sections of learning within each grade that, you know, our numbers are bigger than an average size classroom. So our seventh grade are just in the two science laboratories, and our eighth grade have taken hold of our library space right in the heart of our campus, which is great. So we're in person as well, offering in-person learning 5 days a week to all of our families. We're also offering a distance learning model for those families who want to be remote 5 days a week. And we're also offering a hybrid model for those families who want to come in 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 days a week and be at home on other days for whatever scheduling needs that they have right now. We're obviously adhering to all CDC and New Jersey guidelines or New York for avenues like these other schools are. And we were able to, you know, implement some really enhanced cleaning protocols and redo our HVAC system over the summer and make a lot of other plant upgrades over the summer in anticipation of students coming back. And at the forefront of everything was obviously just our students and our faculty and staff's safety, health, well-being, mental and physical. And then right below that, number two, similar to what Christy said, is we really wanted to maintain what makes PASH PASH, and that's what we feel is a really strong second to none sense of community and brotherhood. At Chapin, they have cohorts and avenues, they have pods. Here at PASH, we're the Hawks, so we call them kettles. And we have our boys staying in their kettles and not mixing too much throughout the school day, which is great. We also, throughout this whole process, have really tried to ensure access and equity for all of our students. We've deepened relationships with all of our families. I can say that without hesitation. We've also furthered our one-to-one device program so that all students K through 8 have a device, have an option of staying home on those days when they need to. And so far, so good. You know, I was talking with Chandler before we got going here, and things are starting to feel normal. We're 4 weeks into the day-to-day, and this week, I'd say things are picking up. The boys are really getting the hang of the protocols, and it's really starting to feel like home again.
Is there something going on at your school in response to these challenging times that you feel is, you know, very innovative and you're very proud of? Something specific, you know, that anyone wants to share?
Over the summer, we provided a lot of flexibility and some innovative enrollment solutions for our families. I mentioned the flex program in the upper division, which was filling a need for a lot of families who, you know, for whatever reason, if they were out of New York City or maybe they had a family member who was immunocompromised and just didn't feel comfortable with their child, you know, coming to and from campus. Or the commute, you know, we have a lot of students who get to campus by public transportation, use the subway. And so, you know, that obviously wasn't desirable for a lot of families. So that flex program, you know, really, I think we're proud of, you know, our ability to be sensitive to the needs of our families and put a program in place that serves their needs. And then in addition to that, I mentioned our campuses in Brazil and in China. We also launched a studio campus this year out in East Hampton. This had been, you know, some time in the making, but sort of came to fruition this year. And great timing as it was, where we did have a lot of families who had left Manhattan and they were now out on Long Island. And so we were able to open up this small studio campus, which could accommodate around 60 students on the physical campus. And this was an opportunity for families out there to have that in-person instruction. Stay enrolled with avenues. Again, a lot of similarities between the experience that students are having out there in the Hamptons as to what they're having in New York City. And then in addition, we've always had an Avenues Online program, which we do consider a separate campus. And the enrollment within that program went through the roof this year, both from families that were enrolled at Avenues New York, but also from the external community. And so being able to have that program, that infrastructure already built, I think gave us a leg up. I know lots of schools are, you know, tinkering with and exploring online options, especially, you know, now more than ever. And the fact that we had that in place, we were able to really just sort of start adding seats and actually had to expand that program. Enrollment went from, you know, around 50 students last year, we're at around 400 this year. So just to give you a sense of the interest. Wow. in a program like that?
I think the coolest thing that we have on our campuses now, and maybe you guys are familiar with it too, are these owls in each of the classrooms that allow for our students who are at home to really get a classroom-like experience. It's also allowed for me as the secondary school placement director to bring in admissions officers from schools in our area or beyond, and bring those admissions officers in from their campus. And when a boy speaks up to ask a question, you know, the camera's zooming right in on him, and the admissions officer really gets a chance to get to know that student as well, which is cool. And then I got to give a shout out to our IT department, which, you know, was one person previously and increased to three people over the summer. And let me tell you, these people are working their tails off. They're the first ones in, last ones out. And you know, on top of that, you know, on top of putting in the hours, they're really bringing I think the grace and the attitude and the demeanor to the role that it really needs at this moment in time. They are pulled in 1 million different directions at any given second in the day. So I have great admiration for our IT team, as well.
I agree that our IT people are absolutely amazing. And we were not, we did not have the benefit of having any sort of online platform or any familiarity with even that market or how to do it. And so I am, you know, very proud that our tech team and our teachers, you know, and administrators, that we came together, and from day one, back in the spring when we return to campus, that from day one we had decided and built a platform for synchronous online classes. I think that had a lot of forethought and visionary, and it was I think it was just the right thing to do, and I'm very proud that our community, our leaders, came together to make that decision. And what that positioned us for was an opportunity to ensure that the students were not going to lose any ground during the spring. It also gave us the opportunity to identify early any opportunities to improve. Of course, at that time, we were not expecting that we would return in the fall, you know, as we have returned. But because we made that decision and we, you know, made that pivot seamlessly, it really did better position us, and it better served our families in the spring and put us at an advantage for this fall to continue growing and learning and continuing in this new next world.
Well, I think I'm similar to my colleagues, really proud that Pennington was just so thoughtful of the plan and made investments early, because a lot of that technology, such as the owls that Taylor was describing, they're no longer available. Our tech guys joked that we could sell them for five times the price on eBay, and the same with our big tents that have air conditioning and heating, and they have the owls and the smart screens and the artificial intelligence kiosks that recognize a face, quickly scan a temperature, and give you a green or red light. So I'm proud of that, but I'm even more proud, and I think everyone here would agree with me, that despite the masks, the social distancing, the tents, the weird owls, it's still, our schools still maintain their same heart and soul and spirit when you're on campus, and that makes us feel really proud of the resilience of our communities.
So can you talk a little bit about any changes to your own admission cycle process or your placement process, any of those type of things? Anyone want to touch on that first?
Yeah, so I think, of course, just about everything has changed in the admission process. But I think for me, the greatest change is the evaluation process. For us to get to know the student, for the student to get to know Chapin, we really invested a lot in the student's visit when they came to visit for a full day. There was a lot that could be gained in those days. The student got a chance to meet the other students that would be progressing in grade with them. The teachers had an opportunity to have one-on-one with the students, as well as observe the student with the larger group. I had an opportunity to have a conversation with the student. The student got to go home, and hopefully they were very excited about the day that they had at Chapin School. So there was just a lot of opportunity and just a lot of information that could be gained by that visit day. And if I didn't say this earlier, with our return to campus plan, we have an extremely restricted access to our campus is extremely restricted. Not even current parents are able to come onto campus. So obviously we're not going to be having prospective families, no tours, no visiting students that are applicants. So I think that's, for me, is the biggest loss, is that personal touch and the things that we were once able to determine through those visits. As far as things like academic assessments, of course, we've transitioned all of that to Zoom. We've developed an online assessment for every single grade level because we continue to enroll throughout the summer. It was actually quite busy. I feel pretty good about what we've developed there, but still, having those conversations with, and some of these kids are like 7 and 8. I mean, we have little ones. So, having that assessment and time with them by Zoom and giving them fun homework assignments to do for me, for fun. And then their mom or dad or, a parent or a guardian is going to send that to me. It's just very different. So, I miss that. I miss the evaluation process. But other than that, I think the mechanics of it and kind of the steps involved are pretty similar.
Yeah, so from an admission standpoint here at Princeton Academy, we're very similar to Chapin. We've taken everything virtual. You can do a virtual tour. You can do your interviews virtually. And besides that, I'd say the biggest thing is that we're really, trying to be creative and willing to take, chances in order to really get to know kids any way that we can, as best we can. So we're more than willing to have more casual conversations with students earlier in the process and not consider it a formal interview or anything like that, and really just open our doors virtually in any way that we can. And since you asked, Jan, from a placement standpoint, yeah, we're not necessarily doing everything virtually. Actually, we're really looking forward to Sharon and Chandler joining us in person with our eighth grade, at a social distance and outside in one of our beautiful tents next Tuesday. So if any secondary schools are willing to come visit us in person and meet our boys in person, I'm more than willing to accommodate that. And we are doing quite a few of our placement visits virtually as well.
The process is going to, from our standpoint, is going to look very similar to previous years. It's just that the events will be virtual, but we all gained confidence in the spring when we had the panic of having to take revisit days virtual. And we learned, you know what? You can convey your program, your community, your spirit in the virtual space. So interviews will be over Zoom. I think some families will be delighted to hear that tests are optional. And I think we really mean that. The body of schools, I've met with a lot of other colleagues, and they're saying, there's just too much going on. It's too much pressure. And we will find other ways to look even more holistically than we already did at an application. And some of the other panels I've already been on with other colleagues in this field in admission are just telling families, ask more questions, request more of those informal meetings that we're all saying that we're more available for.
Yeah, I'll just echo what's been said and what Sharon just mentioned. We as well are test optional this year. And we actually made that call in the spring for applicants that were applying late. Test centers were closed, and while SSAT is offering an at-home version, and there you may be able to find some Prometric test centers administering SSAT or ISEE, we didn't think that was necessarily an even playing field for everyone in our pool to access those tests. And as Sharon said, it's just going to, enhance, I think, our holistic assessment, which we always try to bring to the table.
Now, speaking about events, right, opportunities for families to get on campus, what are those going to be like? And I know there aren't going to be many of those, but are there going to be virtual events? Does anybody want to touch on those? I know we're in the process of planning open house, which Sharon, I'm sure, will touch on. Does anyone want to go first there?
As you know, our open house will be Sunday, October 18th, and it will be through Zoom links. We do recommend that you RSVP in advance so that we can get you those links. We're hosting a 2-hour event, which will include opportunities to visit classes and to see student panels, to listen to some students tell their own stories. And 2 hours is never enough. There are going to be some things that are missing from the event that you would have found in an in-person open house. But this has inspired us to create a series of follow-up events that will also be virtual, but they're more in-depth than what we would do in a usual season. So there are going to be ways for families to take advantage of this new situation. Some other people have said, look, in the past, you have to spend half of a day going to each and every school. The schools overlap. You're rushing from school to school. In the virtual space, it's much more relaxed. You're home. You can easily visit 3 schools in a day. Anything you miss will be recorded. And it allows our students who would have been traveling for boarding from a further distance or even from a different country to finally be equal participants in these opening events. So There's some restrictions, but there's also a lot to look forward to.
We're also doing a virtual open house. It's going to be on Tuesday, October 20th. It should be exciting. There'll be some eighth graders on there, as well as a lot of Princeton Academy administrators and teachers. And I'll just touch on our other thing going on, which is our virtual tour, and say that that'll be a really personalized experience for prospective families as well. You know, I've already seen Hillary Nastro, our director of enrollment management, walking around campus with her iPhone on Zoom and showing people around, introducing prospective families to people around campus and showing them right into the classrooms as well.
I would just add that, you know, we in admissions are very sensitive to the fact that families may be a little anxious or feeling like they're not getting that full picture of the school with the inability to come to campus. So we've sort of upped our game, so to speak, with the amount of virtual events and programming that we're offering this year. We actually just wrapped up our first upper division open house this past Saturday. We'll have a second one in November, fully virtual. You guys all shouted out the tech department yet. This will be my chance to praise them. They were the you know, rock stars for that, building a website. Lots of, you know, both asynchronous and synchronous content. We have a cool augmented reality app, Avenues AR, if anybody's interested in poking around, where you can see 360 views of campus spaces and hear about student projects. And that's something that, you know, we never utilized before. And, you know, while there are challenges, there are also opportunities this year to get to know the school in new ways. We have weekly, you know, student panels for middle grades and upper grade students, you know, starting early in October and continuing through the rest of the year. You know, thematic events on STEAM and diversity, equity, and inclusion, project-based learning, some of the signature programs at Avenues are going to be offered throughout the year. So we hope that despite families not being able to walk around the building, that they're still getting the insight that they need to, you know, make their choice when decision day comes.
We are also producing right now in a virtual tour. I have a virtual tour that I did myself during quarantine. I call it Made with My Kids, My iPhone, and Love. It is not on the website, but I do share it with families whenever I'm getting to know them and talking with them about Chapin and their children. But we're in the process now. We're in the process of having a more professional, or actually a professional video tour, open video tour made. And our open house is going to be in November. It will be the second week of November for sure, but we have not set the exact date yet. We're trying to check on a few things. But I do agree that moving into this virtual space has really given us the opportunity to be more efficient in the communication of information. It's giving us an opportunity to actually maybe reach more people in a way, because as Sharon said, it kind of removes some of the obstacles that typically had been there before. I'm seeing that both in my role as with admission, but I am also director of secondary school guidance. So I actually wear two hats. I wear actually a few hats, but those are two of the hats that I wear at Chapin Schools. So when I'm guiding our 38 eighth graders through the secondary school process, it's actually made it a little bit easier for us to connect with secondary schools and be able to have that immediate conversation and interviews. It's so much easier because they're having interviews all across the country and they don't have to leave the building. I've set up three spaces in our on campus where they can go for their virtual interviews during the day. I have a, you know, a log, so I know who's in what room with what school at any time. And so it's for that purpose, it's really streamlined the process and giving them access. And I think in a little bit, in some ways, I think it's actually given the student the freedom to consider schools that are, you know, further away and not really just think about, I'm going to be kind of locked into my geographical area here, you know? So I think in some ways it's actually been good.
Do you have any advice for families or students regarding, you know, virtual interviews?
Yeah, so as far as when I'm working with the students and I'm talking with them about the virtual interview, I tell them to, first of all, just be relaxed and remember that it's a conversation. So I think that's good for whether it was virtual or face-to-face. So that's just kind of, you know, a given. But in terms of navigating the interview through virtual space, I do give them tips like make sure that you look at the screen. I mean, these are things that you really have to think about. And when you're talking with a person face-to-face, making eye contact is a little easier because you have that person right in front of you so you can, you know, focus on making eye contact. But when it's not a person, you really have to then think about, I'm going to look at the screen and really be focused on not moving your head and you know, limiting your physical, you know, your body. I also tell them that they have to be, you know, aware of things like their background and lighting. And I know that that might be difficult for some people, but I have to say it because I do think that it's important. I also encourage practice. I mean, we have interview partners at Chapin as a part of our secondary school guidance program. So there's a series of interviews that they go through with their partners. So they're continuously building and improving through that relationship with their partner. But so obviously we move that process to completely online. So even their practices are done virtually through Zoom. And sometimes the practice interviews are in the evening. Sometimes the practice interviews are during the day, because again, we don't know exactly when the student is going to be interviewing. So we try to give them the opportunity to practice anticipating the situation as it may be in real life. So those are just some things that we give them to think about.
One thing that I've been trying to stress to my students here at Princeton Academy is that now more than ever, probably preparation and coming prepared to carry your half of the conversation matters more than ever. I think that maybe for an introverted kid especially, you know, professional interviewers like Mr. Hockey and Mr. Fraser Pauls on this call are gonna do a really good job at drawing that introvert out and getting him or her talking about, you know, what they're really, really interested in, what they're passionate about. I feel like on Zoom, that might be a little bit more difficult, and it's a little less of a natural conversation. So I just think it's important for the students to come prepared with questions about the specific school they're interviewing at and ready to really carry half of the conversation. The only other thing that I'll say is that at this moment in time, whether it's about virtual interviews or just about, you know, how our lives have changed in general, I really think the character matters more than ever. And, you know, it's our mission here at Princeton Academy to develop young men to be creative, compassionate, courageous leaders of a just society. Sharon's heard me say it before, I'm sure. We really think that you know, that mission is more important today than ever. And we really are encouraging our boys to remember the wonderful things that they do on a day-to-day basis that reflect their good character, that, you know, a 14-year-old boy, a 13-year-old boy just thinks is normal. You know, I help my mom make dinner a couple times a week because I like to take some work off of her plate, and that's just my life. It's normal. Well, I'm here to tell these kids that, you know, that's what interviewers want to hear about. Those are the kinds of mature traits that a lot of interviewers are looking for when they're looking for prospective students. So
I was just going to say that I have a slightly different perspective to offer, because for our applicants for grades 6 through 12, they'll be doing a small group interview as opposed to that one-on-one interview. And while I don't think that that's the norm, I have heard of other schools that do assessments, you know, whether it's with a design challenge or in this group model. So for that, you know, I would just say a colleague introduced me to the acronym WAIT in some of these shared spaces, and it stands for why am I talking or why aren't I talking? And I think it's a good thing to keep in mind for any student that might be experiencing that group interview. You know, what we're actually assessing, in addition to getting to know the students' interests, strengths, weaknesses, we're also sort of gauging collaboration, interpersonal skills, how they, you know, take up space in that room, because that's, you know, may be indicative of kind of their participation in that student-centered environment that we're offering in the classroom. So, you know, again, are you taking up all the airtime, which isn't great, or are you also maybe not offering enough to the conversation, which also isn't great? So, you know, striking that balance, I think, is key.
I'm just, I think I agree with everything my colleagues have said. You've gotten some great advice. And the only thing I can possibly add is actually for parents to consider, possibly along with your own children, that in a traditional interview, such as what Pennington has always done, the student would come into an interviewer's office alone for about 20 minutes and have a conversation one-on-one, and you'd be in a waiting area. And then you come in and have a conversation in which you can share things your child may have missed and or ask questions. Now, it's really tempting when your child's at home to be sort of hanging just off camera. That's up to your family. That is totally free choice. But just know that we do hear you when you're offering little prompts. And also know that we are professional interviewers who've seen that some students are not their best selves when their parents are there. They're self-conscious. These are adolescents. Others blossom when their parents are there. So just be aware of your dynamic with your own child and come up with your game plan of what your role is going to be in their interview.
You know, it's a time of uncertainty, right? If you could tell or convey one thing to these families out there, what would it be?
I guess what I would want to say is that it's already been said that we are so sensitive and tuned in to the challenges that you're facing this year, and that we are just really grateful for your interest and your perseverance on your end of it, because our schools don't exist without you. And that's why we are willing to work harder than ever to offer more individualized experiences, conversations, to make this work for you. So make this year your own, be tough, be committed, be optimistic, and take advantage of all that we're offering. And I can guarantee you, you will end up in a great fit school.
I love the point of being optimistic. I completely agree. I would want people to know that independent schools are poised to be adaptable. I mean, that's what we do. And so pivoting to address a need, big or small, is something that we do well. So please consider independent schools. And even though, you know, our buildings may be restricted right now and you can't come inside to get to know us, but please know that we are, our hearts are open. And if you give us a shot, you truly will not be disappointed.
Yeah, I totally agree. I'm a huge proponent of independent school and really believe that in this world there aren't, you know, any bad options. So all the schools that are already on your list, if you're listening to this podcast, you know, they have tremendously dedicated faculty, they have great programs, they probably have jaw-dropping facilities. So just remember that there's a lot of good options out there for you, that admissions officers are nice, they just want to talk to you, get to know you, and that everything's going to be okay.
I agree with everything that's been said. I would say, and this has been touched on, take advantage of the virtual events that our schools are offering. The admissions teams are putting in a great deal of time and effort to make these positive experiences for you. As Sharon mentioned earlier, you know, this virtual space takes away that commute, that travel, you know, so they hopefully are accessible and easy for you to tune into, and they're going to be great. They're going to offer new perspectives. Also, you know, talk to friends that you have who send their children to the schools that you're considering. Word of mouth, really, really important, something to pay attention to. Are families happy? You know, how have they felt that the school has handled their reopening? You know, just get that sort of inside track from families that you might know. And then, yes, as Taylor and Christy, Sharon mentioned, you know, we are here in admissions to serve the families looking at our schools. So if you need something that you're not getting, don't hesitate to ask. We're always happy to make introductions. If you want to connect with student ambassadors or parents in the community, we can make those things happen very easily. So don't be afraid to ask for what you need.
Well, I want to thank all of you for your time tonight. I learned something. I'm sure we all learned something. We appreciate you guys sharing all of your different perspectives. I wish you guys well as this year continues, and I'm sure we'll all be in contact. Thank you again, and have a great night.